Hey everyone, it's Belinda Ellsworth here from Work From Your Happy Place. Today I have a great interview in store for you. I've got Lisa Bloom, who is an outstanding composer. So please enjoy a sample of her work before we get started with our interview.
Welcome to Work From Your Happy Place, the podcast that equips you with the tools, know-how, and motivation to live your dreams and find your happy place. Be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter for a recap of the week's guests and a preview of what's in store. To sign up, simply text the word happy place with no space to 33444. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce the host of Work From Your Happy Place, Belinda Ellsworth.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Work From Your Happy Place. It's your host, Belinda, and I'm so excited to share our guest with you today. Lisa Bloom is another one of our artistic guests. You know, we've changed the outline of our show in the last couple of months. Maybe you've recognized that or not, but Mondays are our business entrepreneurs and Thursdays are artistic entrepreneurs, and so our artists, and we're really excited to be featuring them. So, to tell you a little bit about Lisa, she is a composer, has worked for years in Hollywood as an orchestrator and arranger on some of the most popular network television series and feature films, including Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman, The Flash, and Batman Animated, Memoirs of an Invisible Man, Rescuers, The New Lassie, and the IMAX film Special Effects. Her orchestrations and arrangements have been performed all over the world, including the London Symphony, major Hollywood orchestras, and the Prague Radio Symphony. She's composed multiple indie film scores, a full-length ballet, and a variety of orchestral and chamber works. Her music continues to play worldwide and is represented by Sony Music. Since moving to Dallas, Texas, she has scored several indie films by local directors, including an upcoming feature film for Impact Productions, Trinity Broadcast Network. It is my pleasure to welcome Lisa Bloom to our show.
Thank you so much, Belinda. Thank you for having me.
Yes, absolutely. So why don't we just dive in here and why don't you fill us in on some of the gaps? Tell us about your journey, where it all began, and how you've been living out your passion with your music.
Sure. So I was born in to a very musical family. My father was a violinist and he also played classical guitar, and literally classical music blared through our home from morning till night. And so it was no great shock. You know, I took to the piano at a very young age and I started composing pretty young, like age 7. And I studied at UC Berkeley, but it was a very academic, pedantic and kind of atonal composing staff. No, nobody's there now, so I'm not insulting anybody in the current administration, so I don't have to worry. But at that time, it was a very 12-tone, atonal sort of view that composers took. So it was no great shock that I decided to go into film music, ultimately when I graduated, because you could write beautiful music. You could actually write melodies that made sense and beautiful harmonies. So I just took my car, basically, dumped my stuff in there and moved to LA. And I started working as a pianist pretty quickly.
Okay.
But I started studying with amazing, great composers there through opportunities with ASCAP and BMI. And eventually I took the professional coursework at UCLA in film scoring. So very early on, actually, after maybe a 2 years, a big opportunity came my way. And this is part of my journey. I learned a tremendous amount from my mentors, amazing teachers I had. I was recommended to join this sort of young cadre of up-and-coming, quote-unquote, you know, film composers, big film composers, at Warner Brothers. And it was to be my big break. You know, I mean, that's a big deal to go and be asked to score an episode for, an action adventure series. So I'm fast, you know, because I know there's a lot of details I'm leaving out. But at any rate, this big, you know, was supposed to be, you know, big event ended up to be kind of the low point of my career. Because what I ultimately did, I was working with the head composer who was brilliant composer, Shirley Walker, who's passed away probably about 20 years ago. And she was fabulous. And she looked at my score before we went, you know, to record. And this is about like 4 days before Downbeat. And I had overwritten this score that sounded like, you know, French impressionism. I was, you know, Ravel was my favorite composer. So I sort of made it sound like Daphnis and Chloe, if anybody knows that piece. And it just did not fit. I mean, you don't write a French impressionistic score for a, Warner Brothers action adventure series, you know. And she looked at this as like, I think you need to rewrite this. It's pretty music, but this doesn't really fit. So I said, okay, I can do this. And I left and I had an anxiety attack, and it lasted. I couldn't sleep. I started writing. I would crumple up the paper and then throw it, you know, like I had this huge pile, you know, the proverbial pile of, you know, rejected melodies. Yeah. Uh-huh. And, you know, by the second day, I was kind of incoherent because you can't miss sleep, you know, but by the third day, I was literally hallucinating. I mean, I remember that the notes on the page looked like spiders and they would walk across the page. So what ended up happening was they did record the score. It was barely, it passed. I mean, it worked, but it wasn't, I'm amazed that it even worked. But she took me aside. I mean, I knew that it was so subpar and what I was capable of, but I was barely coherent at that point. But she said, you know, would you be more comfortable orchestrating first? Because I can help you with that. You know, I can help refer you. And I said, yeah, I didn't want to be in the limelight. I wasn't ready for that. I wasn't ready to stand up in front of all these A-list, top-notch, you know, musicians at that age with no experience under my belt. So what I ended up doing was orchestrating for a long time. And it was fabulous. I learned at the pace I was able to. And I made plenty of mistakes, but not in the same way, you know. So I'm glad I took that opportunity in hindsight, because it did lead to all these doors opening for me as an orchestrator and arranger. But it really taught me, you know, because I will never put myself through that again. I mean, I learned how to deal with my anxiety, and I learned how to exquisitely write out a schedule down to, you know, everything. Mm-hmm. And with plenty of wiggle room, because it's a miserable situation when you know you have to write a tremendous amount of music, and it takes time. I mean, you can't just do anything and just like write, scribble something on a page. It has to make sense. And so I became really good at scheduling and managing, and, you know, just being, going from, you know, just sort of intuitively, you know, feeling the music to being really super disciplined. And I don't know if that's helpful to anybody.
Wow. I think it's all interesting. And I do think that what I like about that story is that even though that happened then and that might have been a low point, I mean, you were able to find your way of where you really needed to work. And so in retrospect, it was actually really a good thing. And I think sometimes people lose sight of that, or they're not able to see that and only look at it as a shortcoming, or that it, you know, you failed at that particular thing. So it was great that you had a super great mentor that saw your talent, right, and was able, right, to push you in the right direction. But it's also good that you embraced that. You could have taken that as being insulting. You know what I mean? I think there's a lot of things there that we just have to be willing to go on the path to learn and continue to learn. So I love that.
Yeah. No, it was a profoundly humbling experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
And no, I mean, there's just like no room, in my opinion, for, you know, ego or anything. It's like, no, it's all about the music, being prepared and doing what works, you know. And it's such a great privilege to work with, you know, top-notch musicians. You want to write something good for them, and you want it to be, you know, worth their while to play. And you don't want to squander opportunities. So, and you also want to write what's appropriate. You can't write, you know, just think, oh my God, I have 60 musicians. I'm going to rewrite, you know, whatever, Daphnis and Chloe ballet. You can't do that. You have to write what the visual requires.
Absolutely.
And, yeah, so no, that was the moment I sort of, yeah, it was a pivotal moment. It just like everything changed after that. And so I'm grateful for it. I mean, I can look back now, you know, mm-hmm, and say that, you know, I survived and I'm grateful, but at the time it was difficult. So
how has your business, how's the business today, affected your lifestyle? How have you made those two sort of cohabitate?
Right. So when I was orchestrating in Hollywood, and I've moved to Dallas, Texas almost 10 years ago, but when I was working as an orchestrator, it's an all-consuming, it's almost like an obsession that really doesn't leave time for anything else. That's at least how I felt. And I think I've adapted, and I started writing, you know, for other kinds of program shows that didn't have that same timetable. And once I moved, I had to find other people to collaborate with and other ways to get my music out there. And I started doing a lot more what's called production music, which is really film music that gets placed in mainly television, but now there's a lot of other venues for it. But you can write it on your own timetable, or at least not with the same sort of intense scheduling. Like, you know, you get something and it has to be turned around in 48 hours and the downbeat's at 9 a.m. and you almost don't sleep. You know, it's like, so I've chosen different kinds of projects to work on intentionally. Also because I started a family 22 years ago. Mm-hmm. So it was hard when I was writing and I had babies. That's really tough for Hollywood, but it that's why I adapted my life to write for production music, to write concert music, to write for theater. None of those kinds of deadlines compare to the Hollywood kind of deadline. But there's other things that have changed. The whole industry has been changed because of electronic MIDI and what we call virtual instruments. And so now I basically have an orchestra in my living room. So I can get my music out there. I don't have to, you know, only record in London or Prague. And I can collaborate with a few musicians. It doesn't have to be, you know, a 65-piece orchestra. And so it's enabled me to get out a lot of my music in different venues and to collaborate with a lot of other indie composers who maybe, I mean, indie producers who don't have the budget for a big feature film.
Right. So. That's very interesting, but so true. And I'm sure that that was probably helpful to you during this whole period of time with COVID, that you've been able to still continue to work.
Oh yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And actually now I feel like because of the technology, it's so advanced now. It's good on the one hand, but it's also displaced a lot of musicians on the other hand, which I'm not happy about. And I do try to work with live musicians if I can, but now you can produce albums yourself, you know, and get them out there. And also we've got, you know, nobody buys CDs anymore. So
right.
You don't go to, you know, so you, if you can get your stuff heard, you can become very popular and you can, you know, it's just a whole different dynamic now.
It is a whole different world in that. My husband is a recording engineer / mastering engineer. That's what he still does. And it's just changed dramatically about the way people release music and the different bands he's able to work with that just send him files from all over the world. You know, it's just completely, it's different from when even I first met him and then we got married and he was spending hours and hours and hours in a recording studio. It's just a completely different ballgame.
Right. But it's exciting. And honestly, from a composer's perspective, it's fabulous because you can't put my finger on it. But
it's so true, though. So true.
Yeah.
Let's talk about one of your greatest accomplishments. Let's talk a little bit about some of the highlights of your career.
Right. Oh, my God. You know how I think we kind of lose perspective because the things that I'm working on now, I think, well, I'm the most excited about those in some ways, but I'd have to say, looking back, that I'm really proud of all the arrangements I wrote for Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman. That was a show that I worked on for a long time. It was a 5-year run. We had usually somewhere between 30 and 60 piece orchestras playing, and it was Aaron Copland-esque, very Americana music. And I was able to do a lot of arranging, you know, adding my own counter melodies and harmonies and things like that. And I'm really proud of those scores. And I love the show too. It was a very beautiful show about this, you know, mythological, not mythological, but about a doctor at the, you know, circa 1878 or whatever, you know, turn of the century. And it was just beautiful, inspiring music. And I'm glad that I could be part of that. So if I had to pick one project that was a big one that lasted for 5 years, I'd have to say that one.
Oh, that's great. So now let's talk about, and I know these all sound similar, but I know as a performing artist that they're just different. Like one is like a great accomplishment. Then there's like, you know, there's your favorite. Like sometimes your favorite isn't necessarily your greatest accomplishment or the one that received the most accolades. So did you have a favorite performance or project that you worked on?
Yeah. I have to say, I wrote for a really great opera singer. That was an amazing opportunity. And I wrote Art Song for him. And that was a very small thing, but to have a world-class opera singer sing your art song at a major theater, that was a thrill for me. I know that's like the smallest thing of, and nobody cares about that really either in the film world. But the other thing I would say was, I wrote a whole score to a ballet. It was a ballet slash modern dance for a really outstanding company and choreographer, the Malashok Dance Company. It was called Misjudgment in Paris. And it was so exciting to work with dancers. We also had singers. I mean, it was a thrill to work in live theater. And it played in a major theater, the Old Globe Theater in San Diego. And eventually it had, they took vignettes of that and went on tour, and part of the San Diego Symphony played part of the score, and they had some performances. It really was thrilling. That's probably my favorite thing that I've ever had to work on. Yeah.
That's
fun. And everyone's so nice. All the dancers, oh my God, they're like the sweetest, kindest, down to earth people I've ever met. I don't know. Maybe it was those. I don't know. I just love them. So.
Oh, that is awesome. So we've talked about great accomplishments and favorite performances. Is there something that is memorable in your career that just also stands out? Like, you and I talked a little bit before about this, before we came on the air.
Yeah.
And that is, it's that feeling, like you said, whenever you're working on something right now, you feel like that's the, you know, this is the next greatest thing that I've done. And yeah. Yet we can also get lost in looking for that next greatest thing and not feeling like, oh, like looking back and saying, wow, I have had a lot of great accomplishments. And that is the hard thing when you are a performer, is kind of that next gig, you know, and...
Yeah.
And then forgetting to look back at everything that you have done and how that's played a part of where you are right now. It's kind of still that the journey kind of continues as a performer. So let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, it's like you feel like you're only as good as your latest whatever, your latest gig, your latest show that you've done. And you don't look back at everything that you've done and you kind of forget. And you think, oh my God, I've hardly accomplished anything. I can't believe how little I've done. I don't know. But then you look back and you remember, like, you have to compile something and you say, oh wow, yeah, that's not bad. You know, that's pretty good. Yeah, I think as artists, as composers, a lot of times we kind of go up and down. Like, we'll compose something and we'll think maybe it's okay, and you know, oh no, actually it's awful. It's terrible. It's the worst thing I've ever written. And then you go back and you listen later, maybe much later, a year later, and you'll say, gosh, that's actually not bad. I actually like that. Wow. You know, but once you've created something, I don't know. I think it's almost like a roller coaster ride. And I know I'm not the only one. I know composers go up and down about this, especially. And I think we go up and down also just looking at what we've accomplished and thinking either we've, you know, I've hardly done anything or nothing I'm really proud of, you know, I think that's kind of a natural feeling. But then you review and you actually go back and you listen to something and you see the value in it and you can mm-hmm. maybe give yourself a tiny pat on the back. It's really hard for me to compliment myself. I mean, I really, a lot of times it's like when you look at your face, you can only see that, you know, the blemish. It's kind of
right.
Like when you listen to your music, you think, well, geez, I didn't bring out the inner lines enough, or I didn't, you know, it's like, it's just part of the critic in yourself, but you have to fight that and enable, give yourself the space also to say, okay, you did a good job on that. You can give yourself a little bit of credit. It's okay. It's okay to do that. So.
Which brings me to sort of my next question. And that is, you know, as an artist, you want to continue to grow your talents and you have a project and you can immerse yourself in that. But there's a business side to promoting yourself or getting those next gigs.
Yes.
And how have you been able to manage sort of the business side of your career?
Right. That's a great question for me. Okay. I'm going to be really honest. I have not been good and my family and my husband, and everyone says, you know, it's time. You've got to get yourself out there more. And so I have a website and I'm just getting into the whole social media thing to begin to promote myself, because I think I've always relied on my jobs flowing to me, because they did. I didn't have to do anything. It was sort of, you know, I could get orchestration gigs and I didn't have to do anything, but now I have to, especially because I don't live in the center of it all, you know, in LA, even though it's getting decentralized now. So I think that getting a presence, well, I'll just tell you something that I did. I decided, you know, I just have to get back into film scoring, but I'm ready to be the composer. I've done enough arranging and orchestrating in my life. I'd like to just compose. So I started working with local directors here, and I did a small film, and it was shown in a, you know, in a film festival here, and a director saw it and loved what I did. And that led to, I think, three films that I've done with him since then. And he's fabulous. So I think once you step out there and you just start doing the work, as long as people can see it, then one thing inevitably leads to another. But you've got to get out there and get exposure. I'm not a master on the internet. I'm working on that now. I think what I'm going to do is release more of my albums through you know, Spotify and, Apple Music and that sort of thing, because a lot of my music does play, but it's distributed. Now it's Sony. It used to be another company that switched over to EMI, and then that became another one. And now all the libraries were bought by Sony. So I'm on a lot of albums, but it's not necessarily my name. Like, people have to look down and find out, oh, she wrote that piece. But what happened was, for example, a quite well-known Hollywood director found my film, a film noir piece that I had written, and loved it so much that she asked me to do a sample score for her upcoming feature that was being shot in Hungary, in Hungarian. So I did, and I got very close to getting the film, but ultimately they wanted a Hungarian composer to work with the Hungarian National Orchestra. And since I don't speak Hungarian, I didn't get, but I came really close. But the reason that she discovered me by one of my albums that had film noir music. So I think that's one thing I would tell young composers, or, you know, aspiring composers, is get albums out there, you know, on CD Baby, which will lead to, you know, Spotify and Apple Music and Amazon Music and all these areas. And because a lot of times directors will just be listening to music and they'll say, I love that music. Who wrote that? And maybe they'll contact. I mean, it's just like, you know, you have to just get your music out there somehow. Tell you something else. I'm starting to collaborate with other musicians, and some phenomenal musicians, but I'll tell you about that later if you want to ask me about upcoming projects, because I'm really excited about that. And that has to do with being an entrepreneur, because we're starting something together, and that's very empowering for a composer who's usually the one who's hired, like, you know, write music for my project, but this is our music. We're starting it together. So I'm excited about that.
Oh, that is great. So one of our signature questions on the show is, what does working from your happy place mean to you?
I think that it's really important for me to be in a place of peace and harmony. And that means starts with all my relationships my loved ones, my family, my kids, my husband, you know, siblings, everybody, and all my friends. I just have to always be in a place of peace and harmony. And when I'm in that space, as long as I have a little space to myself that has sonic, you know, isolation, where I can think, I can create. So it's a matter, it's having and maintaining that inner peace. You know, I mean, different people do it different ways. I don't know if this is too basic, but, you know, whether it's taking walks in nature, or or jogging or whatever, I need to be in, like, take walks through where I can see green and nature for at least an hour a day. It's how I center myself. I don't know. It's like, I kind of have, it's like, I need that quiet. I would never listen to music during that time. It's like, I want to hear the wind or the birds or just, you know, ambient sound. I need that quiet space. I think you have to have your own space, no matter how small, that no one touches. It's like, even if it's in a closet and it's tiny, it has to be, that's your creative space. And it shouldn't be violated, you know, like, because you might have notes there or whatever that you write to yourself or melodies there, you know, with music paper. You don't want anyone to see it because it's your private creative space, no matter how small. I think it's important to have that. And there are composers that I teach that are, you know, aspiring composers. And I always tell them, you've got to, you know, even if you have a tiny apartment that you share with six roommates, you've got to have your little, etch out your little space where you can do your thing. And, you know, no one's going to rumple your papers or, you know, whatever.
It's so funny. This is so silly. But when you said it, it just reminded me, I work out of my home, but I have a complete office here with employees that come in. And then my husband, he has his studio here. So sometimes, you know, when he wasn't before COVID, he went into work, but now during, he's here and he works in the studio. But I used to just come in here and shut the door and be in here in this complete soundproof room. And I could, like, get my thoughts together and really kind of find that space. And now that he is home, it's like, I sometimes just go sit in my pantry and shut the door, and nobody comes into the pantry in the middle of the workday. And so it's just a silly, goofy thing, but it is sometimes what I do, just to go in there and, like, not hear the phone, not hear, have anybody from my office asking me questions. And it's just nice to be quiet for a few minutes to get my thoughts together.
Oh yeah. I mean, I tell my kids oftentimes, don't ding me on the cell phone, because I don't have the cell phone in the music studio. You know, if you really need to reach me, you can call me on the house phone. I'll hear it ringing somewhere. But I just need to sort of close the whole world out. It has to just be in what that space, and there's nothing but me and the music or whatever I'm, you know, scoring to.
Right.
Because otherwise, you know, it's too distracting. It's like everyone has to leave you alone.
Absolutely. So I know you've already given a couple pieces of really great advice, but any additional advice you would give to someone starting out in a performance art career, of whether it's composing or anything, that you'd like to offer, any words of wisdom?
Sure. I would say, get as much experience as you can honing your skills out of the limelight first. Like, you know, work with little, if you're a composer or if you're a performer, work with small community orchestras first or high school orchestras. Just get used to, you know, honing your craft, because you'll make mistakes, and it's better to make certain kinds of mistakes in a smaller venue, you know, a smaller venue without everybody looking at you as you make your way up. But also at the same time, expect to make mistakes, because even the greatest performers and composers, they make mistakes. I mean, it's not, you know, the end of the game. That's something else too. You know, I will say, to going back to that dark moment, which was the low point of my career, at the very beginning of my career, I did, you know, I did have a few moments when I considered, you know, digging a hole and crawling in and covering myself, you know, because you feel humiliated if you haven't done your best work. But everybody should know that the greatest of composers, the greatest performers, have all made mistakes, and we transcend them, and we learn from them, and we grow from them, and life goes on, and it's okay. You know, it's not going to ruin everything. I used to go to piano recitals of a lot of the great pianists with my mother growing up. And we sat in the front row listening to, maybe I shouldn't mention his name, Rudolf Serkin. He's passed away many years ago. And he was a brilliant pianist, but he made mistakes, and I knew the music. And we were sitting there, and I was shocked. I was absolutely shocked. Nobody I don't think a lot of people knew that in the audience because maybe they hadn't played the pieces, but I'd played the pieces and I knew them. And I realized, you know, he's not a god. He's not perfect. We're all human. It's, mm-hmm. you know, it's okay. It's okay. You learn from them. You want to not, you know, obviously you don't want to cultivate your mistakes, but it doesn't have to crush you and you shouldn't beat yourself up about it. Learn from it, brush yourself off, move on. So
absolutely. Great advice for anyone actually in business or in performing arts or in any walk of life. It's like, we make mistakes and we are the ones that choose to hang on to them because the rest of the world has already forgotten about them by tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah.
So tell us about those new and exciting things that you are working on right now.
Right. Actually, I'm going to do a plug for LinkedIn too.
Okay.
I only started recently doing LinkedIn, and through LinkedIn, I've been able to meet these world-class musicians, I mean, amazing musicians, people who head ballet orchestras and opera orchestras and top-notch opera singers. And I met a fabulous cellist who's also a best-selling author named Oliver Bennett Schlaffer. And we really hit it off and we're really on the same page. And we decided to collaborate on a big show, which probably won't go on tour for at least a year, if not longer, because of the whole COVID thing. But basically, it's a live concert show that is a unique format. It's kind of a hybrid format that combines sort of new thought, like a new thought seminar, like a Dr. Joe Dispenza, Tony Robbins, but more like Dr. Joe Dispenza, but also with concert music. And Oliver is a phenomenal world-class cellist. And so the evening will combine amazing music, hopefully, and also stunning visuals, and also Oliver, who will be teaching about the whole power of cymatics. Cymatics is a relatively new field, but it's the science of how sound affects our bodies and how visible sound vibration is actually transformational. It's complex, and yet you can see it visually. There was a famous 18th century German physicist named Ernest Chladni, and he studied the physics of sound by bowing a metal plate with sand on it, and he discovered that every different pitch, every different timbre, every different note produced geometric shapes and complex patterns. And so the field of cymatics takes us further. It builds on that, and it shows how sound and music affects us really deeply, that there are actually, because we're all essentially at the most fundamental physical level, we're vibrating strings, according to superstring theory. So the sound, the music that we take in with our bodies actually creates patterns that we're, you know, that our body reflects. I know I'm not explaining this well, and Oliver will do a much better job, but you can see that the evening is sort of, it's part uplifting, inspirational seminar and with a lot of music and also visuals, stunning visuals, hopefully that actually demonstrate this.
Yeah, I can see that. I'm sort of trying to get a visual in my head, but
yeah.
I think you're doing a fine job explaining it because I'm at least having my own thoughts in my head about it. But I think music is really moving and music is really inspirational and it can motivate you and
oh, yeah.
It can take you to, you know, it can put you in a completely different mood than the mood that you're in, you know, whether that is happier, it can do that sad. I mean, it can do all of those things. It's so amazing. So this is very interesting. I'll be interested in following up on that and seeing where that takes you. And just as a side note, I think that's where we found you, was on LinkedIn.
Right. And I only just started doing that, you know, like I was this hidden person. Composing in a room. Yeah.
I think it's awesome. LinkedIn was not my platform either until till COVID happened. And then that was a platform that I decided to build during COVID. So, and it's gone well for us in that regard. So anyway, and I've met some really awesome people through that as well. So
it's unbelievable. I mean, I'm connecting with some of the top musicians and conductors all over the world, and many have expressed a strong interest in collaborating with me. So I'm trying to, you know, to make that happen little by little. Oliver happens to live in Dallas, Texas. So this is kind of amazing. We were talking for a while and I thought he was in France. I don't know why. I was mixing him up with somebody else and I happened to speak French. So I thought, well, that'll be okay. And I don't mind going to France. That's fine. But then it turns out he's in my backyard practically, you know, so to speak. So it's meant to be. Yeah, it's meant to be, definitely.
There you go. Yeah. Well, Lisa, this has been absolutely delightful. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
Know if people are looking for your music, they can also find it under Lisa Bloom Cohen. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, but mainly my website, Lisa Bloom Composer.
Okay.
.com. That's probably the best place to go. And I'll announce upcoming concerts. I might mention if they want to shoot me an email through the website, I can let them know when the show's open. So, you know, if they're interested at all, that's, you know.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for imparting your wisdom with us. And thanks so much for sharing your talents with the world.
Thank you for this opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. So thanks, everyone, for tuning in today on Work From Your Happy Place. Don't forget to subscribe so that you don't miss a single great episode. Leave us a review. We love that. But best of all, share us with a friend. That's the greatest compliment that we can have. Now I'd like to leave you with a piece of Lisa's work. Please enjoy. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next time on Work From Your Happy Place.
Thanks for joining us at Work From Your Happy Place. If you like what you hear, please share it with your friends, and be sure to rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher. For a free gift on finding your own happy place, please visit workfromyourhappyplace.com and click on the free audio button. Thanks again for listening.